Well, for more on this story and some other ongoing legal issues, we turn now to former Massachusetts federal judge, senior lecturer at Harvard Law School, and WBUR legal analyst Nancy Gertner. Judge Gertner, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be here.
So you spent almost two decades as a federal judge. I'm just wondering, what's your initial reaction to this story?
My initial reaction was to recall a case that I had where the man was had been sentenced to time served. He was supposed to be released. And the U.S. attorney said to me, well, he's not a citizen. The man went crazy in my courtroom. He said, I am a citizen. I am a citizen. I wouldn't let anyone leave the courtroom. I don't know whether that was lawful or not until the issue could be resolved, because there's a difference between raising these claims in a criminal case where there's due process and letting the man go out the door into the bureaucracy that is the immigration system.
Or abroad. Where
and
he
so
would have to contest his citizenship.
I had insisted that everyone stay in the courtroom, and it turned out the computer was wrong and that he was a citizen. So I have considerable sympathy for this judge who looked at the mugshot and said, this is not the same person, and what can I do to protect this person's rights? What she did, I don't know. And that's part of the story here, by the way. Whatever she did, the prosecutor and the defense lawyer also agreed to it. So if that's the notion. Everyone's talking about the judge having made this decision, but I would be surprised if it was just the judge having made the decision and not everybody being involved.
So do you believe that there is political pressure to deport first and respect rights later?
Yes, that's right. I do. And I think, and what's happening is that political pressure is distorting the system in numbers of ways. Our governor, let me say this clearly, has no right to criticize to direct or to suggest that a judge should be taken off a particular case. He just doesn't. He doesn't have a right to insinuate the executive into what is essentially the affairs of a separate branch. And Andrew Lelling of the U.S. Attorney's Office should certainly pause before you open up an investigation as to what was clearly not, I can't say clearly, but doesn't look like anything other than someone who may have made a misjudgment, if at all, rather than someone who is intentionally obstructing the system.
Now, some would say that this isn't necessarily an isolated incident involving public criticism of a judge in Massachusetts. For example, a Quincy District Court judge came under fire in July for setting a low bail for Emmanuel Lopez over a failed drug test. Lopez has since been accused of killing Weymouth police officer Sergeant Michael Chesna. And the SJC Chief Justice Ralph D. Gantz has been outspoken about this issue, and in October at the annual State of the Judiciary, he called our current situation, quote, some semblance of a threat to the independence of the judiciary and the rule of law. What do you make of those comments? And what do you think of the governor's involvement in the case? I know you say he has no right, but there should be a balance of the three branches of government.
Well, that's right. We criticize Trump, President Trump, for the things he has said about Judge Curiel, who was a Hispanic judge. We criticize him for the kinds of things because we understand that when the executive weighs in, it has a disproportionate impact on the situation. So having Governor Baker now weigh in with respect to this judge on how the court should run its business, outrageous, right? If there's a rule violated, the court will address it. The governor shouldn't. And even with respect to the cases, there was a case in Quincy where he said that the judge's decision was, quote, ridiculous and outrageous. That's not for him to say. If you really respect the branches of government, you keep your mouth shut.
Last year, the SJC ruled that police cannot detain someone solely over an immigration issue, with more and more communities refusing to or being barred from cooperating with federal authorities. What would you say to those who are concerned that ICE may be losing its ability to enforce immigration laws?
What the SJC said was that state officials could not arrest detainees, that ICE had to do that with a proper, essentially a proper detainer. That we could, that in the Lund case, the SJC case, the question was whether you can tell someone to stay in your courtroom until ICE got there. Mm-hmm. And essentially, state authorities had no authority to detain someone. So that was not cooperating. It was just saying that ICE has to do it. We can't make our state officials complicit in this. ICE, in this case, could have waited outside the courtroom.
Hmm.
Right. What is helping or hindering? It's very interesting that the ICE official was in the courthouse.
Right.
Right. Maybe he should have been outside and respected the bona fides of a Massachusetts courthouse. Maybe he should have been out. Maybe we require the federal government to do what it's going to do, but not in the four corners of an institution that is intended to protect rights in a way that ICE is not.
Okay. You know, a courtroom is obviously a place that's supposed to operate within the rule of law. Does it trouble you at all to see court officials or potentially even a judge accused of actively helping an individual evade law enforcement officials?
How she did it, we don't know, right? We know that there was this issue of turning off the tape machine, and that was troubling. How this was accomplished, nobody knows. And let me sort of change what I just said. How she did it, we don't know who did this. That is to say, she saw an issue in her courtroom which troubled her, would have troubled me, should have troubled any judge. Do I turn this person over who may not be the right person? That's a key issue here. He didn't match the mugshot. The question of how that was accomplished is a different question entirely, but her concerns were completely well taken. How is another issue?
And we should say that similar to what happened in your courtroom, here, this defendant also claimed that he's a U.S. citizen.
That's right. And as I understand it, he was picked up later on by the ICE officials. He went before an immigration judge who bailed him, who gave him bail.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a situation in which the immigration authorities, this worked. In other words, his rights were protected. But if it's in my courtroom, my courthouse, I should be concerned that rights are respected. So the ICE officials can wait outside the courthouse.
Okay. And I should say, you know, for more on your experience of this type of issue in the courtroom, we've got a link to your Boston Globe piece on our website, radioboston.org. All right, Nancy, while we have you, I want to ask you about the latest news in the Mueller investigation. We're expecting to see Robert Mueller's memo regarding the sentencing of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn today. Flynn pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI just about a year ago. Remind us what exactly Flynn admitted to and what his original deal with Mueller's office entailed.
Flynn had admitted to lying about his contacts with Ambassador Sisolak, and he had admitted to that, and in exchange for what we understand to be no prosecution against his son, no prosecution for other activities. I don't know the scope of it, but the general reporting suggests that was actually one charge of many, and the government gave up that charge and only charged him with lying about his contacts with Sisolak in exchange for cooperation. His sentencing has been put off multiple times, which is an indication that he is cooperating more with the government. Mm. You want the sentencing to take place after all that he is supposed to do has been done. So that, you know, have it not go on in the middle of it. And so one gets a sense that from December 2017 until now, he has been cooperating with the government. The scope of the cooperation, we won't know until we hear what's going on at the sentencing.
And what are you going to be looking for in the memo? Should we expect a lot of it to be redacted?
Well, that's actually an interesting question. A rational prosecutor would redact information that then may well bear on a continuing investigation. It may be one cue as to how close the Mueller investigation is to concluding about how much information is in this document. In other words, Mueller will disclose more if it looks like this investigation is wrapping up, because Mueller is in a very clever way telling the story of the investigation through these indictments and through these court submissions. People are saying, you know, when is his report? At the end of the day, the indictments and the submissions by Mueller is like a storyboard. And we will be able to put up pieces of the story and then see where it's going.
So is that why you think he's including quite a bit of narrative detail in these indictments and other court filings? Is that standard procedure?
It's very unusual, actually. It's very unusual. A prosecutor doesn't want to, sort of show his hand when he doesn't have to. And then you take the indictments against the Russian nationals, which was telling the story of the hacking in the election as against individuals who will probably never be prosecuted in the United States. So it's very, very interesting. It is a storyboard, and the Flynn part is part of the story. Cohn is part of the story. Manafort and other parts, and Roger Stone and Corliss. Are also part of the story.
Mm. Well, speaking of Manafort, he's the other player we're expecting to learn about more this week. Last week, Mueller's office voided their cooperation agreement with Manafort, accusing him of lying. What do you make of that? And what are you watching for as Manafort's case moves forward?
It's hard to know until we see what he lied about. I will recite speculation, which is very interesting speculation. And that is that that Mueller knew that Manafort was going to go to the president behind his back, and that Mueller also knew, this is speculation, I have to say that again, and Mueller also knew that Manafort was lying, right? That the government has an enormous amount of data now. It's not easy to somehow create something out of whole cloth. So Manafort goes to the president and says, here's what I'm saying, just want to let you know. The president then writes his statement to be given to Mueller after he's heard from Manafort and presumably after he has seen the statement from Michael Cohen, also the false statement. He then drafts his statement based on Manafort and Cohen, and Mueller then goes after Manafort for lying and Cohen for lying. If this is true, it would be extraordinarily clever. Basically the president would be caught in a lie.
Yeah. So the president tweeted yesterday about two key players in this story, his former attorney, Michael Cohen, and Roger Stone, a longtime confidant of the president. And he had very different messages for each, polar opposites, he said of Cohen. Michael Cohen asks judge for no prison time. You mean he can do all the terrible, unrelated to Trump, things having to do with fraud, big loans, taxis, etc., and not serve a long prison term? He makes up stories to get a great and already reduced steal for himself and get his wife and father-in-law, who has the money, off scot-free. He lied for this outcome and should, in my opinion, serve a full and complete sentence. Then he also tweeted this on Monday about Roger Stone. I will never testify against Trump. This statement was recently made by Roger Stone, essentially stating that he will not be forced by a rogue and out-of-control prosecutor to make up lies and stories about President Trump. Nice to know that some people still have guts. So Trump has obviously tweeted about the Mueller investigation many times before, but do you think, in your opinion, that this may be evidence that Trump is threatening those who testify against him and essentially offering a carrot to those who stay silent?
Yes. Do I have to say more? this is part and parcel of other things, dangling pardons with respect to particular witness. No, it is really... Every once in a while when we're dealing with Trump's tweets, you have to rub your eyes and saying, are we in a rational world? The notion that he is saying, sort of picking the winners and losers in the people who are testifying, directly trying to influence the investigation is extraordinary. No other president would even weigh in on these kinds of matters at all, full stop. And he's weighing in this way.
Well, that's Nancy Gertner. She's a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School, a former Massachusetts federal judge, and WBUR's legal analyst. Thanks so much for your time and insight, Nancy.
You're welcome.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Maria Garcia. This is Radio Boston.